I was almost tempted to write out notes for this morning, but I couldn't quite do it. Steve, you were talking last night about fishing and going deeper, and I know that sometimes we all have different perceptions because we come from different places. And so I want to give you two stories about fishing that I think come from totally different perspectives. And the first one is there was no one in town who could catch fish except for one man. And the game warden asked him how he did it. And the man told the game warden that he would take him fishing the next day. So once they got in the middle of the lake, the man took out a stick of dynamite, lit it, and threw it in the water. And after the explosion, fish started floating to the top of the water. The man took out a net and started picking up the fish. The game warden said, "That is illegal." The man took out another stick of dynamite and lit it. And he handed it to the game warden and said, "Are you going to fish or talk?" There are moments. And my other favorite story about fishing is there were two men and they were in boats about 50 yards from one another. You can tell I come from not the metric side of life. One guy was catching all of these very large fish and he kept throwing them back in. And the guy in the other boat was only catching tiny little ones and he was getting really, really frustrated. And the more he watched the guy in the other boat throwing these big fish back, he couldn't stand it anymore. Finally, he went over and he said, "You are catching the best fish. Why are you throwing them back? What is your problem?" And the man in the boat took out a frying pan about this big, and he said, "Because they won't fit." Sometimes our perception is a little bit different. And my hope is this morning that you will discover that one size doesn't fit all. We are all part of the same body. We all have a mission in front of us, but it may look very differently. And if Ryan would just show, we have a video of Destination, just so you get a little bit. I'm kind of excited because today is our 1 year anniversary of the start of us going to work to plant this church. So this will give you a little bit of what we have accomplished.
People who would not normally go to a church or who have been burnt by being at another church are able to come and be accepted, and that's really exciting.
I've been at Destination since we started in January, and I got engaged in the worship team, and I absolutely love it. I love being involved in music, and it's a great passion of mine.
God has been prepping us, changing our hearts and our attitudes towards how we view people, but he's been calling us out to actually to get outside what we call the normal church, but to get out into the community.
Beth came to me in October and asked me to consider coming. She was doing a church plant. And so I prayed about it, and I felt that I was released to do this. So I'm helping out with the worship team. I play keyboards.
One thing that Destination Church is doing is getting involved in the city, being part of the community in the city. So wherever we go, we're doing church. Church isn't confined to a building.
I really believe in added value outreach and becoming salt and light in a community. So when we sit only inside our own buildings, we miss the opportunities of connecting to the world and being visible. One of our programs that we have started has been called the Tulip Tuesday Award. And so each week, a bouquet of tulips goes to a different business in St. Thomas. Just saying that we're praying for them, that we're hoping for the best success for them as they contribute to the community. We hold a women's Bible study here on Monday nights, and we have about four or five other places, restaurants and businesses in the city who are doing the same kind of thing for our youth groups and our men's group meets in a business. All of those kinds of things are beginning to happen. One of our opportunities of being in one of the businesses was we held our first Alpha course in the back of a restaurant. And we ended up with 26 people on that course, four that were from with the church, that were our leadership, and the rest were totally outside of the realm of church. One of those girls became a Christian, and in the middle of that course, we had a baptismal service in our hot tub for her. And then one of the other girls that was part of that course has come to faith as well, and we saw five come to faith on that course. And it was exciting that even today, we had the chance of baptizing both of their children. Sometimes people said that white people do square church, where they sit in rows and you see the back of someone's head and there's not much time to connect to them. And First Nations talked about doing circle church, where they sit in circles and actually connect to one another. And I thought about that a lot, and I thought about what it would look like as we put this new church together. And so we tend not to sit in rows. We either have long tables or round tables. People tend to communicate, and so rather than shaking people's hands and doing a very short piece, we tend to have a 4 or 5 minute time where there's a question asked, where people can just talk to one another. We have coffee before the service so that people have a chance to interact. We don't do greeters at the door because we believe everyone should connect to everyone else. And by not putting a designation on that, we've had a lot of responsive people just meeting one another and actually sitting at table together and sharing their stories. And food is biblical. So the fourth Sunday of every month, we brought out Crockpot Sunday. So we enjoy a meal together that just adds one more element to people sharing their community. And St. Thomas is a community where 1 in 10 go to church. So we have a huge mission field in front of us. But there's 45 churches here, and so doing it the same way that's already happened isn't the answer. So that's a little bit about, I don't know whether that, is that too low or can you still? Does that work? That's better. Okay. So that's a little bit about who we are. I started the 1st of January, and literally it was about gaining information, having conversations with people, talking to people. The beginning of January, we had a team of 17 who were our core team. We held our first Sunday service the end of January, and we had 34. And we are now just shy of about 100 to 106 people who are part of our community. Two-thirds of those are under the age of 27, and about 60% come from outside of the church community. So we have a fairly interesting mix of people. We have business people, and we have people who are on Ontario Works who are sharing meals together and connecting, and it's been an incredible journey. And it makes me get up in the morning going, I like church, which is rare sometimes when you've been in ministry for a while. In front of you on the platform are some shoes. Now, all of them would have a designation of shoe. There isn't one there that would not be called a shoe unless, of course, you consider a slipper. But some people wear slippers everywhere, so depending on what you do, none of them are the same. They're not all the same size. Some are very colorful. Some desperately need to be replaced. The holes in the bottom or the shocks in them are very, very gone. And yet each of those has served a purpose or still serves a purpose. Some are for seasons. Some, you know, they hang around forever because they're the comfortable one that you just don't want to get rid of. Anybody have a pair of those shoes that you know should go far, far away? But you just can't ever let go of them because they fit your foot and they feel really, really good. Well, I want to suggest that each of those is very much like our churches. Somehow, we all have a designation of church or a sense of fresh expression where Jesus is in the middle of it, but they may look very, very differently, and it's okay. Some need a little bit of help to be replaced or to be reconfigured. Sometimes you will take them to a shoe repairman, and he can fix that heel that has come off. I remember being at a conference once where one of the ladies who was at the conference, who was just this very bouncy woman, and she had big heels like this, only one of the heels had broken off. So literally she was doing this. 'Cause
The heel was gone, but she needed those shoes to match the outfit. And there are pieces sometimes that churches will limp that way because we have gotten comfortable with what we have. And I'm hoping that maybe today we can stretch you a little bit to think outside of what the parameters are that are normal for you. And if I could give you one thing that you could think of through this process, it would be that you can't sacrifice the next generation on the altar of our preferences. Sometimes you can't sacrifice the next generation on the altar of our preferences. Now, I would do PowerPoint, and some of you already know this, but my husband would tell you that me using PowerPoint would be like someone trying to change a tire on a moving car. It doesn't go together, and it's brutal on the person who has to do the PowerPoint, and people have tried, and then they come up like this at the end. And so it's just safer if you imagine in your mind what's happening. Okay? There is an expression, I think, in the business world that might be something that we can use in the church world that might have a good combination or a good affinity with fresh expressions. And I don't know how many of you have heard of it. It came out about 2003, and the term is called disruptive innovation. Is that a term that's familiar to anybody? They use it within the healthcare system. They've used it in the business world, in a number of places. But if you were to talk about it, an innovation that is disruptive allows a whole new population of consumers access or service that was historically only accessible to consumers with a lot of money or skill. So a cell phone would be a disruptive innovation, or a laptop computer, because once you have them, you can never go back. And the more I hear people, we actually took our landline out about 6 months ago, only to go with just our cell phones. And I didn't realize what a problem that would be until my daughter was at our house last night, and she doesn't have a cell phone. And so she's emailing me here saying, can you call someone for me? Because I'm at your house and there's no phone here. But our landline will probably never, ever go back. Something has changed for us. And once upon a time, only the very rich could afford that. But in terms of fresh expressions and new church plants, they really are about allowing a whole new population of people access to Jesus Christ, who might not otherwise have had that opportunity, because sometimes we've restricted it only to those who belong, believe, and feel, act like we do. So as long as you fit our model, you're allowed to come and be part of that. But in Canada, and really around the world, there are so many people who don't have access to church anymore. I would term them probably agnostic over agnostic. They are ignorant of the facts. They do not have them to make a good choice. And until someone puts the facts in front of them in a way that they can understand, they really don't have access to the whole gospel of grace. And so things change in our society, and I think about our churches in terms of how can we make them actually think outside of the box. Now, I almost hate to use that phrase because most people say, you don't even think there is a box. And truthfully, I probably don't. I know that there are parameters and structures, and I appreciate all of them, but I think we have been so tied to them for so long that we've forgotten to think for ourselves what it looks like on the other side. And if I were to think of a reference that would be, for me, has been really helpful, and this is even different. This came to me while I was in Edmonton, actually. And it was a different scripture verse, and I was just reading in Acts 7, and it's Stephen's speech. And in the middle of that speech, in verse 30, he's talking about the experience of Moses. And Moses has grown up in Egypt, and then he's left for 40 years, and then he has this encounter with God. And it's interesting that in that encounter, one of the things that God says to him really is, get yourself ready, because I'm sending you back to Egypt. I've heard the cry of people in Egypt, and you need to go back. And I'm not so sure that there isn't a piece of that, is that we have all been on one side of the fence, and then we have become part of church, and we become a part of a culture that understands God, and we've been there, and it's comfortable for us. I mean, Moses was comfortable in the wilderness. I mean, he ran away, but at the same time, he finds a wife, and he has kids, and he has a lifestyle, and everything is really good. And I don't know that he was thinking that there was going to be a burning bush experience at that moment. And then in the middle of an ordinary day, God just said, wait a minute, you and I need to have a big chat. What you're standing on is holy ground. There isn't a part of this universe that doesn't belong to me, and you have to think differently. You've got to think outside of what you have normally thought about in order to do what I'm calling you to do. And so there's a call for him at that moment, and I think, you know, our world really is about Egypt in so many ways. There are people who have had connection to church somewhere. It might be a great-grandmother. Somewhere in their past there has been something, but it has been lost. But there is such a spiritual hunger in the lives of so many people, and we're missing it. Our son, we have three children, and our middle son is 26. And he has a really different take on what church is. God is okay for him, but the church itself gives him some issues. Because he wants to see it done slightly different. But in that moment, I listened to so many of his friends. And one of our church plants, if you want to call it that, it was a season for 9 years. It started out with our son's basketball team. He was used to being at school every night till 6 o'clock at night. And he was in grade 11, so he would have been 16 at the time. And part of that was the school went on strike again. And this was the third strike that these students had encountered in about a six-year period of time. And I know that all of them were supposed to benefit them, but that's not what we were seeing. But this strike was different because it was a work-to-rule strike, which meant you had to go to class, and you had to learn all the academics, but there was no sports, no music, no drama, no art, all of the things that motivate young people to actually learn because they have outlets for their own gifts and abilities. And we were seeing something tragic happen, and drug use was going up. Kids were becoming very apathetic. Like, life was just changing. But one of the biggest things that we saw was, because our son and his friends were used to being at school, they needed a place to hang out. And so I would come home after work, and there would be 35 teenagers in my house every night. Now, I want you to imagine basketball players, where the shortest is 6 foot, and they haven't had a place to get rid of all of their energy. So the testosterone is a little high in the room, and I have drywall. Now, I don't mind kids in my house, but my house was seriously going to take some abuse, not because they were trying intentionally, you know, but if you shove someone up against a wall who's a little bit larger, it has consequences. And so I went to the principal and I said, we have a problem on our hands. We have a lot of students who are really in desperate place right now, and something needs to shift. And she said, well, it's not my problem. And I said, no, 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 you guys are the ones who have instituted this strike, and you said it was for the benefit of the kids, and the kids are going way down, and I can walk through your hallway on any day and shake hands with someone and get whatever drugs I need. Something is seriously wrong. She said, it's not our problem. So I said, well, it has to be someone's problem. And so I went back to these kids, and I thought, my husband and I talked about it, and we thought, okay, how do we make this work? And so what we did was we said to the kids, if I make you pizza once a week, will you come and talk to me about God for an hour? And they went, oh, okay. I think it had to do with the pizza. I really do. However, we thought we were going to do that for a very short period of time, and for 9 years. And we went from about 17 kids, two who had any church experience, and 15 who had nothing, to 45 kids meeting in our house Sunday nights. And because of a geographical move, part of that shifted, and it was time, it was a season, and they were starting to grow up. But one of the biggest things we heard from them, and why I know that spiritual hunger is so rampant out there, is that we would get things like, oh, well, I'm a Buddhist Christian, or some other combination of something. And I would be like, how does that fit? Oh, well, we're Buddhist by lifestyle and Christian by value. And then I'd look at their rooms. Think, yeah, no, I don't quite get that part. But what I had discovered was they had heard bits and pieces in the media of what church or Christianity or religion was all about. And what they had done is just taken bits and pieces of each and put their own religion together, trying to make something fit. And the biggest part of that was, it's because no one had shared the truth with them. And parts of me said, we have got to share the truth. And so we saw some young lives totally transformed by the grace of God, and absolutely dynamically different young people now. And so part of me says, if we are going to hear the cry of Egypt, then we have got to go back. And we've got to do the research, and we've got to find out what people are saying. And so for us in this last church planting, please never think that if I give you an example of something we do, it's not because I want you to go and do exactly the same thing. It's only because it's what's working in our culture and in our community. You know your community best, and that's where God has called you to be. So if you take the time, you will know what works best in your community of how you open the doors. So some of the examples may work. Others, you may go, oh my gosh, we could never, ever do that. That would be horrible and terrifying, and that's okay. What I would suggest, though, is that you actually do the research to find out what works in your community and how that fits together. And so in this last church plant, in June of last year, the sponsoring church that has asked me to come in, they're a church of about 450 people. They are an active, growing congregation, but they recognized that if 1 in 10 was the average of someone going to church, they really weren't hitting the mark either. And they said, there are people out there who are never going to come through our door, and we're kind of stuck to our DNA. So how do we make a difference? Because we really want to reach out to other people. So instead of just trying something little, they went, okay, why don't we invest in something larger and do a whole brand new church plant with a different DNA that can reach a whole new population? They took 5 years to pray over that, to put the information together, to do the research. So in June, I received a file about this big of all the research, of all the stats, everything that had been done, which was incredibly helpful. For some of you, it's almost like a cause survey happening. But this was so much better. But you know what? All of that was still stats until I talked to people. They were just numbers on a page until I knew what the story was that went with those statistics. And so I began making phone calls, and I invested my life in a coffee shop on the main street of St. Thomas. And I had coffee with anyone who would talk to me. But I also had to be very intentional about this process, and so I called the mayor. And it was just before election, so it was a really, really good time to get their attention. Tell me your dream for the city. I said, I have all of these stats. I'm new coming into town. I would really love to hear what you have to say. I appreciate that you're a busy person, so if you would just give me 15 minutes, that would be wonderful. And I probably spent about an hour and a half in his office, and I'm kind of like, no, I know you're a busy person. And he's like, no, you can ask more questions. Because I think he said, nobody's asked these questions before. And so we wanted to get a handle on why it was that we did what we did, because something I learned at BCP last year while I was sitting here in one of the workshops was something that triggered for this whole church plant and some of the ways that we did it. And one of the big things is we can sit in our church and we can have great conversation. And we can talk about it and talk about it, and we can believe we know what the person on the other side of the world looks like and thinks, but until we have the conversation with them, we really don't have a clue. We have an assumption about what's happening on the other side. And so I probably spent more time talking to people outside of the church than inside of the church, but I wanted to balance, so I did both, and I introduced myself to a number of clergy who are in the city to say, hey, I'm here. I'm not going to steal your sheep. That's not why I came. I really want, you know, there's 42,000 people who don't go to church here, so we've got a fairly wide market. And I only want 4,000 of them. I thought 10% was biblical. One of the pastors actually said to me, will you share that 4,000? I said, no, go get your own. I really am generous, but at that moment I thought, now does that mean I need 4,000 people in my church? Absolutely not. But I want to know that the people who have come and been part of Destination will become salt and light, and they will affect that many people in the community. And I have no idea what that will look like, but it will give them permission to do even fresh expressions in the middle of a church plant. And there are so many interesting passions that people have. So being able to do that. Well, we began to learn a whole lot about St. Thomas, and I really didn't want to answer questions that no one was asking. It really had to be about what was the heart of what was happening in the community, so that when we put a program together or we invested time and resources, it was going to add value to the community and for outreach and for the gospel's sake. And so there are probably five things that we found that we really needed to do in order to connect to the people in St. Thomas in a different way. And let me say that just because you don't like something isn't enough reason to do it differently. Like if you go to your church and you go, I don't like that they do that, and I don't like that they do that, and so I'm going to do something totally different, you've let them set your DNA. And really, it has to be about what God called you to, because it has to be what is passionate to you. And it may look different than the other person, but there will still be things that are similar because Jesus is the same Jesus on both sides. And so we began what I would call probably a bridge principle. And I have always believed the best form of outreach is that if I can build a bridge from my heart to yours and let Jesus walk across, then we have succeeded. And so the first thing that for us as a church plant, or if you're doing something fresh expression or church plant, you really need to begin with God. Where is God already? I hate to tell you, he's already there ahead of you. You're not that innovative, and neither am I. It's far easier to go where God already is. He's already stirring hearts. It's interesting, even with Moses, he said, Moses, get ready. But he said, I've heard the cry of the people, and now I'm sending you. So God has already been there before you are. So find the places where God is actively at work. Look at the kinds of things that need to happen in order to partner with that. Now, for us in St. Thomas, it was very interesting. For the last 4 years, there has been a community prayer service that happens in one of the small churches downtown. And they meet once a week on Monday at lunchtime. What I'm doing now is only benefiting from their prayers. They're the heroes. They are the ones that have week in and week out spent time with God praying for God to do something in the community. And so for me, when I come in, I really am benefiting from that, but it was important for me to partner with them. And so I became part of that prayer group to hear that kind of thing, and I hope in 10 years that the prayers I'm praying now, someone else will benefit from. We are all connected in what we do. And so hearing their story and hearing their intent really opened up the door. And I also saw where all the problems were, and I don't know whether this is true or not, it's just something that fits for me. I think sometimes in the church we have often buried our heads in the sand, and say, problems don't happen inside the church, they only happen on the outside? Have you ever, it couldn't possibly happen inside my building. We're all way too spiritual for that. And yet, if we want to be real and honest, all of those things are happening in our churches. But I have a feeling that problems happen in our church so that we can figure out with God how to solve them, and that the very problems we have inside are the ones in the community around us. And if we can solve them with the loving grace of Jesus Christ inside, we actually have a message to take to those in our community with some hope. And I believe hope is a virtue. We cannot do it without hope, and so many people are missing that component. So start where God is. Find those places. The second thing was that you have to reach out intentionally. And a 17-year-old probably expressed this better than anything I have ever heard. And we were driving down the highway together to a conference, and he was coming to help me. And he said, how come churches always use grenade theology? I thought, now that's an interesting thought. I said, explain what you mean by that. And he said, well, you know, we put on these big events, or we do something and we pull the pin and we hope we hit somebody. We have no idea how much damage we've caused. We don't know whether we've been intentional about reaching anybody. We just know we've had a good time. He said, would it not make more sense to actually get a target and set a goal for who it is that you're trying to reach? Who is it in your community that you want to connect to, so that at the end of the day you actually know who those people are? Now, it would be interesting, you know, I could put up balloons that say Jesus loves you. This is not a reflection on anything, but it did strike me a little bit weird that a new church went to a home show and put in a booth. And I said, so what did you do there? And he said, well, we gave away free Jesus. I thought, okay, that's interesting. That's a novel kind of thing. And I said, well, how many people? Well, I don't know. You know, people came by, we talked to them. There were some significant conversations. I said, well, how do you reconnect to those people afterwards? And he wasn't really sure at that moment. He just knew that they had been introduced, and that was the whole point, was being introduced. In my mind, I want to be intentional about what I do. Now, we've been very intentional. You heard the thing about the Tulip Tuesday Award. We became very intentional about that because I had been at a church plant over last summer. I visited a number of churches because I just wanted to see the different flavors and feels, not because we wanted to model after them, but to see what was out in the community around us and what kind of impact they were having. And the pastor at that church said, here's a basket with a whole bunch of ways that you can connect to the community. Am I doing this? I need a deacon. Nick's going to just hold the mic for me now. Does that work? Oh, yeah. Does that sound better? I can actually hear this. I am so used to a head mic and running all over the place, so standing still is really scary. Now I have to figure out where my ADD moment just went. With our Tulip Tuesdays. And one of the things that was on this slip of paper that I was supposed to take home with me, and because I took one out of the basket, I thought I was obligated to follow through. And it just said, when was the last time you thanked someone in your community that serves you on a regular basis? So I thought, okay, that's a very interesting concept. And so what I did was, on the Monday morning when I went back to St. Thomas, it was the whole weekend that the HST had just opened up, and, you know, people were a little bit flustered. That would be a kind way of putting it. And I'd gone to the bank machine, and there was an older man there, and he was going on and on about how terrible it was. And so I talked to him for about 15 minutes at the bank machine, and I thought, maybe this is a good date because someone's going to need something. So I thought, okay. So I went to the flower shop because really I wanted to introduce myself to the people at the flower shop anyway. And she was having a horrible day because they have to have a different computer system for every province then, because it's billed differently, and when you do teleflora and all that stuff. So she was expounding, and I thought, man, I need to buy good flowers today, not just one rose. And so I bought this beautiful little container that had a teacup underneath it and this pick-me-up arrangement. And I was meeting someone for coffee at the coffee shop, and so I just wrote on this note, I have spent the last few months in your coffee shop, and every morning I am greeted with a smile. I just want to say thanks for your great customer service and to have a great day. I took the flowers in, and I went to order my coffee. She said, "Those are beautiful flowers." And I said, "They're for you." She was like, "They're for us?" And I said, "Yeah, I just want to say thank you. You guys make my day every time I come in here." Well, those flowers sat for over 3 weeks on the counter. They were dead. There was nothing left of them that was even nice. But it meant so much to them. And the owner wasn't there that day, and they actually called her and said, "We got a gift today, and you weren't even here. It was for us." And that has changed the morale of all of those girls and opened the door to conversation. I thought, if it meant that much to them, what will it mean to a community that is economically struggling right now? And so we began to send, we went to the flower shop and we said, "Will you partner with us? We want something that's flashy and bright, that's going to pick people up for the day. So we want something very colorful. We do not want it to look cheap. What can we do that will look good, that helps your business? We're going to add value to your business and yet at the same time help others." And so she was kind of looking at us like, "Why do you want to do this?" Which began an entire conversation. And so ever since we've done that, one of the benefits for us of that moment was we were hearing, we obviously must have heard something from the cry of the people in our conversations, because we've now had 4 invitations to partner with community agencies. The meth clinic in town was the last one that we got just before I went to Edmonton to say, "Will you come and dialogue with us?" We have a children's center in St. Thomas that works with single moms or at-risk families, children who are at risk. And they said, "Will you come in and partner with us and maybe teach parenting classes?" And we have a teen center that we're doing the same thing with. So we've had this huge open door. We thought we were just going to bless people. But it's amazing when you're where God wants you to be, the receptivity of that. Now, we knew we had to be intentional for another reason, and I don't know how many of you have read the book, The 5 Love Languages. Okay. Now, 5 love languages work really, really well with couples. They also work really, really well with families, and you can recognize that each child is different and they respond differently. A few years ago, we actually worked on that in terms of employee and employer, that employers, if they know the love language of their employee, actually get more benefit and more productivity out of them if they're actually responding in the same kind of language. Well, through all of these questions and through all of this stuff, we discovered that cities probably have a love language too. Or a community around your church probably has a love language. And so when I talked to people on the outside of the church walls and said to them, "What is the greatest strength of your community? What would this community, if they didn't have it, it would really crash and burn?" And they said, "It's our volunteers. Our volunteers do everything. They mean the world to us. We have so many activities that would not happen in this community if it wasn't for our volunteers." Now, it's interesting, when I went inside the church door, one of the first responses I got was, "We have no volunteers. No one wants to do anything. We have this handful of people who do everything." And I thought, interesting. Maybe it's how we value people in our church. Or they're all out in the community doing something and they're being a fresh expression all on their own. Part of that for us realized that probably gifts of service, that intentional gift of service, doing something for the community, was their love language. And so for us, when we began to put the flowers into people's hands, we were actually doing something that meant something to them. It wasn't about us just doing the normal thing. And I'm going to get myself in big trouble because I know this is taped. But you know what? I have this reputation for doing that, so it's okay. I sincerely appreciate and value when people do a one-of activity in a year for their church community, or for the community through their church. I really do appreciate the work that goes into that and the prayer and all kinds of things. I just have one issue with the process. Who is that event really for? Now, in the last church that I was at before this church plant, we had this event called Doers of the Word. And it happened in November. We chose the day, and we would go to all the community agencies and say to them, we have a number of volunteers who want to be doers of the word today, and we want to bless you, so we'll come and paint and clean and do whatever you need us to do. And then a whole bunch of people would go out, and they would do great things in the name of Jesus for the day, and at the end of the day, we would come back and have a banquet together and kind of do a little bit of this. Like, we've had a really nice day, and we've done good work, and we're real happy. And then I talked to one of the directors of one of these agencies, and I said, so what do you guys think about this Doers of the Word? He said, I hate it. I was like, wow, we feel special. And he said, no, listen. He said, you choose the day, and it's my day off that I would normally spend with my family. So I have to come in on that day and give my family time up. And you choose the time of year, so I have to come up with a project for you. He said, if I knew that you were just available all year long when I needed you, then I could call you, and that would be so much more effective. And so parts of me say, when we do these kinds of things once a year, what happens to the people the following week who really need you? And I don't see Jesus doing one miracle and then taking 6 months off to rest, and then coming back and doing one more. It was kind of like, no, as a community, they worked together to make a difference. So it was an intentional reaching out all the time. And so we changed that day, and we put a Doers of the Word team together that were available all of the time. And that changed our reflection in the community, that we weren't just the people who, as much as they appreciated us, we were no longer the bother to them. We were actually a partner with them. That opened the doors to far more conversation. You really need to invest yourself in everything that you do. This will cost you something. This will be the most discouraging thing you've ever done in your life. And it will also be the most exciting thing that you have ever participated in. You will see people come to faith. I can't think of anything more exciting than to watch someone encounter Jesus. But we have to invest in order for that to happen. It will take your time. It will take your resources. It will take part of your heart. But the end result is absolutely incredible. And every once in a while, we actually get a chance to see heaven now. And if you think that maybe something you're doing now is seed planting and you're not seeing a whole lot of production, or you don't really know what it's feeling like, sometimes God is just really, really kind and shows you down the road what really happened. I had one of those moments at our first Alpha course. I went to Steve, who owns this restaurant, and I said to him, Steve, you have a great restaurant here. You have this wonderful back room with the fireplace. It's really nice. What's the slowest night for you? And he said, well, Mondays and Tuesdays. I said, okay, can I have it on Tuesday nights? I want to run a course for Christianity, just a beginner's course for Christianity. Steve is not a Christian, has no part in the community, but we've had some great discussions since. I said, do you think that you could cater that for us and we could add value to your night that is a slow night for you? And he was like, oh, like, absolutely. I said, have you ever heard of this course? He said, no. I said, oh, good, you will. And so we began, and there were 26 people there. We had 9 single moms on that course. And 2 young girls were sitting across from me one night. One of them, who is our leader, one of our leaders, and Jenny is an evangelist. She became a Christian at the age of 16. She has lived a pretty intense life. She has CP. She always thought she didn't have any value to add to anybody, just because of the struggles of how to walk and all of the things. And we're all looking at her like, you're amazing for how much you've accomplished. But when she connected with Jesus, her whole world changed. And she just wants everyone else to love Jesus. So she's the perfect person to become a leader on an Alpha course. And so Jenny was sitting here, and another young woman who had just come to faith was sitting beside her, who was a single mom. And in the middle of that conversation, Kat looked at me and said, "Where did you used to volunteer?" I said, "Well, I'm a whole lot older than you. And so my volunteer hours would have been in a different city. I'm not so sure that there would be a connection." And she said, no, I used to live in London. I said, "Oh, okay, well, I was part of a Mothers Who Care group, and we went to pray for my kids' public school, and so I was there volunteering a lot. And we had made connections to a number of teachers who had come to faith, and so it was just a really cool thing that we did for about 8 years, and just prayed for these teachers and connected to them. And we always prayed for students to come to faith. But in a school of 850 kids, how do you know? Unless there's something intentional happening." And I said, "Well, it was at my kid's school." And she said, "Well, what school was that?" And so I named the school. She said, "That's the school I went to. Now I know why I remember you." And I thought, wow, I'm really glad I was a nice mom. And I thought, and then Jenny, who's sitting beside, who's one of our leaders, she said, "I went to that school too." I thought, oh my gosh, this is a moment from God, that sometimes it's about the seed planting. It's about that investment that we never, ever knew. And now two of them are sitting in front of me who have become part of our community in a totally different city. So don't be afraid to just invest, even in what you think might be something so small that it doesn't matter. It matters to God, and it matters to the people that you're investing your lives in. And I would say, discover the doorways. There's a t-shirt down there, and if anybody of you want to see it afterwards, on the back it says, "The church has left the building." We have others that say, "I am the church" on the front. And our logo for Destination is really an on-ramp. And the 401 is an amazing highway, but if there were no on-ramps, none of us would get anywhere. We would just drive back and forth and back and forth, and it would be really pretty, except in certain areas like Woodstock that we go. You know those little moments that you don't want to drive through because you know you're going to fall asleep and wake up 20 minutes later and not have missed anything? But there are moments. We have great churches. We really have great churches, people who are committed to loving and serving God. But there are no on-ramps. There are no ways for people to access. And you have to be able to go out and come in a way that reflects who you are. And so discovering the doorways to your community are huge. And we knew in St. Thomas they have this model that says 25% more life, which meant 25% more teenage moms, because there's nothing else to do in St. Thomas. And we want to change that drastically. But because we really felt that we were being called in so many of those moms, and you saw two of them who have both been baptized in our hot tub, and then their kids were baptized as well, we have seen such a move in that. But what we have discovered through that is a doorway that will open the door to something bigger that will be about affordable housing and about creating opportunities for them that will be a hand up, not a hand out. And these girls have taught me a lot, because there is a home in St. Thomas for moms with little ones, and they can be there for 2 years. And there's usually about 9 or 10 girls who live in this home, and then they move out into the community afterwards, and many of them just hit the welfare system because there's nothing beyond. But as part of this program, many of these girls, part of the program is you have to attend church on Sunday. You have to have one thing a week that you do that's spiritual. And we sat down one day over a Dairy Queen ice cream cake and said, and had this huge, honest conversation. And they said, "Will we carry our label forever? When we come to your church, will we always be known as the Fresh Start girls? Or can we just be part of the community?" And we have made them part of the community. And so in some ways, our church really looks like a First Corinthians church. We need a lot of prayer. But they are all at different stages of their faith. But the minute you come to faith, you have a gift. And so to say, when you get mature enough, and when you look, you know, a certain way, then you can do something. We've just said, you know, we're going to disciple you through this process. And so that was a huge conversation for us, because we actually had someone from another church say, "What do you do with all the labels on Sunday morning? Because we have a real when you've got 60% in the community, you really have all of the issues of the community walking in your door. And someone said, so do you have problems with labels? And we said, we have so many, no one, everyone would be confused, so we just leave them all at the door. And part of that process really is about discovering the doorways that opens God and opens Jesus Christ to so many of these people. The last thing that I would love to say, the other two would be get permission and embrace them, just so you have the whole bridge thing. And I do have ADD, and so I'm going to play a little bit, and I know that we want some time for a few questions. If I could give you one other scripture verse that really, really sets the stage. And Steve, you alluded to it last night in a sense of hearing the stats and the charts do this. In Luke, there's this story about a dad who is desperate. His daughter is sick. I mean, really sick. Like, she's at the point of dying. He's probably gone to Shoppers and gotten, you know, Tylenol and done all the things that he knows to do. And he's done everything that he can imagine to help his daughter, and now he has nothing. And he hears that Jesus is close by. And somewhere a moment of hope springs, that if I can just ask Jesus to come, things would be different. And so Jairus sets off down the road. And we know he's desperate because he begs Jesus to come to his house. It's not just a simple, oh, by the way, you know, if you're in the neighborhood, why don't you pop by? This is like, please, my daughter is dying. I desperately need you to come. And Jesus says, let's go. And so they start walking down the road together. And Jairus is at that moment of like, yes. This is going to change. I know when Jesus shows up, things change. And then, man, she's been sick for 12 years. Could she not have waited one more day? Did she have to show up in the moment that I have Jesus' attention? Like, really? You know, if you're a parent and your child is sick, you want everything like we want it Tim Horton style, right? Drive through, get it. And what does Jesus do? He stops and ministers to this woman who's been sick for 12 years. And he doesn't do it quickly. He has a conversation with her. The crowd is around. And I'm sure Jairus is standing there doing, now would be really good. Okay, she's healed. Let's go. I have a daughter over there who's really, really in desperate shape. And Jesus does what Jesus does best and connects to people. But before they get going again, a group of people come from Jairus' house and they say, it's too late. Give up. Don't bother him anymore. Your daughter is dead. The story is over. There is nothing you can do. Can you imagine feeling that close, that you just know you're this close, and someone says, oh, give up. It's too late. We can't ever do that. It didn't work the way that we wanted it to. All of those things are there. And Jairus is kind of like, man, I was this close. And they get to Jairus' house. Jesus said, no, 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 I said I was going to your house. It's okay. And you kind of think, well, why? It's a little late at this moment. And Jesus says, no, 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 no problem. And they get there. In Israel, they don't mourn quietly. You know, they don't do afternoon tea and rest between 2 and 4. Like, they're mourning and they're wailing, and people know that there's a problem. And Jesus says, stop. No more mourning. No more negative thoughts. She's really just sleeping. She's not dead. And they're looking at him like, right, sure. You don't think that we know how to take a pulse? You don't think we know the difference between dead and sleeping? But he pushes them all away, and then he says, Jairus, let's go into your house. And in that moment, he walks up to the little girl, and he says, little girl, arise. And she gets up. And then Jesus says something very significantly, give her something to eat. That's why I know food is biblical. There is a moment in there, and then he goes, don't tell anybody, which I can never quite figure out, because all of a sudden this little girl's going to come out of the house and everybody's going to know. Maybe it's because you don't have to tell anybody because the evidence is so clear. But I equate that story to the very fact that often in church we have heard, and a number of people, we have books written about it, how the church is dying. How really we're at the bottom, you know, we're never going to quite make it. We should just build museums and celebrate the life that we've had. Why are we trying something new? Really, all the stats would tell you otherwise. We've listened to all the mourners, to all of those people. Well, I don't know about you, but when I ask Jesus to come, Jesus comes. But one of the things that I had a problem with as a child is if you told me I couldn't do it, that was equivalent to saying, I dare you. And I think there's probably still a part of that in me now. And I'm almost wondering is when people say, really, honestly, why are you trying to rebuild the church or to do something new? You know, don't you know? My challenge to you this morning would be, I dare you. I dare you to invite Jesus into your community. I dare you to think bigger and differently. I dare you to see the people in your community as Jesus sees them. There's nothing quite so significant as when we think something can't be done that Jesus can do. If I had one story that would define all of this about what hope can do in a person's life and what it's done in terms of our church plant, because someone kind of said, I dare you. Another pastor in the CRC called me in December and said, I have a young man who has an incredible story, who's been out of jail for a while, has some addiction issues, really wants to put his life back together, not so sure it's going to happen. He's probably not going to connect to a regular church, but he really has a heart and a hunger for God to change his life. Do you think that maybe you could have a conversation with him? And of course, for me, that's like a moment of challenge. Yeah, sure, I'll have a conversation with him. This is, you know. And so I met this young man and his wife, and they have three children and one on the way, and we're about to baptize all four of those. As soon as the new baby's born, we're going to do four baptisms together. And this young couple came to church. Well, they came to an Alpha course first. We held an Alpha course in the middle of the mall in St. Thomas. Can you imagine the Eaton Center? Same kind of thing, except it's much smaller in St. Thomas, but it's an old Radio Shack store that's sitting empty that they use as a community room. So we held Alpha there, and we had about 45 people come, and we invited them to be part of that course. And during that course, things really shifted for them, and you could just see God doing amazing things. And then the next thing, I had an invitation to go to their house and to meet her parents and their children who had given up on church years ago. They're a foster family for special needs kids, and they have a son who is autistic, who is in a wheelchair, and who is blind and deaf, and they have been asked to leave churches in the past because he made too much noise. And so they had kind of given up on church, and they saw what was happening for their daughter and son-in-law, and they said, we want to have a conversation, and so I went and had a conversation with them. Now, 12 of them are in our church, and God is doing amazing things through their lives. And because of that, 2 weeks ago, we actually said to everybody in church, because we don't care whether you've been a Christian a week or whether we don't really, we have a few people who have been a Christian for a while because we had 17, but we can't say things like, you have to have been a Christian 3 years to serve, because then we would have no one. And so a couple of weeks ago, we actually handed out Bibles on every chair. And at the end of the service, I said to people, do you have your Bible? Can you pick it up and wave it in the air? You know. And I said, your job this week is to give that Bible away. And when it's sitting on your coffee table on Wednesday, know I'm praying for you. And I just want to hear the stories about what happens when you give those Bibles away. Well, the parents of this couple emailed me and said, "You have no idea what just happened. We took that Bible to Steve's parents, who are the grandparents. And every time a conversation about God or religion shows up, the father walks out of the room. And when we handed him the Bible, he said, 'Can I come to your church on Sunday?' And so we had four generations of this family on Sunday morning in church. And their heart was, 'This is okay, we can come back. We would like to dialogue a little bit more about who Jesus is.' So when we believe for one, it's amazing their connections to what Jesus will do to grow so much more. Hopefully, you have been inspired to build a bridge this morning. And maybe to see your community slightly different about the kinds of things that you can do. And that, like Moses, you will hear the cry or the call of God saying, 'Your community, I've heard their voice. Get ready. I'm sending you to your community.' Thank you."
Thank you.